I think that you can look at like a more narrow use case, and there is democratization that will happen. Like if you're taking a narrow view and it's like a stock or a competitive set of companies, as an example, I do think it's going to be easier in the shorter term for like folks with, let's say, less resources or headcount or technology to get that up and running and try to do it on like in a more limited capacity.
Hey, and welcome to the Momentum Podcast, the show where fintech meets AI. I'm your host, Stan Altschuler, investor, founder, and advisor to some of the world's top hedge funds, asset managers, and data companies. Each week, we'll dive into practical AI strategies to help you cut through the noise, beat data overload, build smarter workflows, and turn your ideas into results. We'll explore everything from AI tools for your daily workflows to building data-driven growth engines for your organizations. Here, you'll discover what's next in finance and how to stay ahead of the curve with AI. Let's dive in. All right. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Momentum Podcast. I'm your host, Stan Altschuler, and we have a great guest, a good friend of mine, Jack Kalia. Welcome to the podcast. Tell everybody just a little bit about yourself and the place you work at.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah. So I'm Jack, as you mentioned. I head up data strategy and sourcing, kind of on the partnership side for Maiden Century. And I'd say increasingly, you know, starting to kind of look more holistically across data science and research and kind of connecting the dots all the way from data supply and sourcing and testing all the way to, you know, the actual downstream analytics and insights around it.
And you guys do some pioneering work, well, very well known and established in the industry. Some of the top hedge funds use you guys to really sharpen their edge in the markets and get these unique perspectives, unique views on their investments and their whole portfolio, frankly, with all the data that you guys look at. I've been in the game, you know, I've done this work back in the COVID and the pre-COVID era, and I've been out of it for a while, for several years. So in the last 5 years, what would you say, how has the whole consumption of data changed from the hedge fund perspective? Are people still looking at spreadsheets? Like, are they still kind of like going through all these different data sources and downloading stuff that is the stuff that I used to do? Or has there been a shift lately?
Yeah, definitely would have given quite a different answer even, you know, 100 days ago. Frankly, maybe even, yep, you know, 20 days ago at this rate. You know, we exist at the end of the day. It's interesting because I've been in the alt data world since like 2014, 2015, back when, you know, I was selling transaction data, and you were still, the conversations were much more along the lines of like kind of the way people are looking at AI bots today, like some skepticism and sort of like, who are you? What is this data? How did you get it? You know, like, can I even buy this? And almost having to, yep, convince people of the value prop. And so obviously we've come a long way in the last like 11 years or so. You know, skipping over a lot of the details, I suppose, it definitely feels like it's kind of mainstream table stakes for at least most investment managers, you know, on the long short side, to be bringing in, you know, I would say at least 5 to 10, oftentimes way more, but, you know, at least at like, let's say a half a dozen or so of these third party sources. And so that's obviously created pain points as far as, you know, when you're an investor and you want to think about businesses and how those businesses are performing and how they're, you know, competing, you know, against one another and things along those lines. You don't want to make data pipelines and ETL and, you know, marrying data sets together your life's work necessarily. So interestingly, like, you know, that's really Kesser, our CEO and founder, like that was in a lot of ways the genesis of him building Maiden Century, you know, the idea platform when he was an investor. And then, you know, afterwards, as he spun that out as, you know, as a software company. I think that what's interesting is we are, you know, at least our historically, we've been a SaaS business, you know, a software company that has like really elegant and useful web portal like tooling that helps different users engage with different types of data sets, but really closer to like the investment thesis, as opposed to starting with the, you know, where does the data live? How do I get it? Did it update? Things like that. But I would say even before what we've seen in recent weeks, I mean, we've already had machine readable files that we're just providing to folks, which basically takes all the data enrichment and mapping and like marrying of data that we've already do for our platform and just lets people kind of take that wherever they want to take it. And in, you know, work with it in whatever environment they'd like. Similarly, we've had an Excel plugin, right, that a lot of clients have used for the last, you know, year plus as well, right? So it's, I think in a lot of ways, we've been seen as a software company. And, you know, like, to, I guess, how you define it, maybe you could say we still are, but we've always thought of ourselves as really being more around, there's a really variable, like, set of kind of personas that are engaging with this data now as the market's matured. And you kind of need to meet them where they're at from like a workflow perspective. And basically the last 2-3 weeks, that's just now like exploded and, you know, is on steroids.
Let's dig into that just a little bit. So persona, the two ones that kind of are obvious probably to most folks that are familiar with the hedge fund industry are, you know, one, the quantitative folks that run big models and they've got a ton of different inputs. And to them, they're probably more like agnostic about what type of data, what source of data it is. And they're just more focused on, does this improve my model? How are the R squares or the correlations going to be different? Is this going to give me better predicting power? And that's great, but I think it's just less colorful, the stories that that you can tell versus the fundamental managers that are very much into these story stocks. And they're just looking at things from a different perspective, maybe, right? Some of them might just be calling the quarter and that's fine. Others are just really putting together this full comprehensive 360 degree view of the data, not leaving any stone unturned, trying to understand everything. So, you know, I take it that those guys are probably using the Excel plugin, right, to plug their data into their own model internally on a stock or whatever, and they map it to KPIs. With that particular use case, how had things changed there? Like, what are the new ways that folks are looking at data now? Is it, does it, for instance, give them the ability to maybe analyze more stocks, increase their coverage, and increase their investable universe? And, you know, does, what's changed?
Yeah, it's good questions. I mean, I think there's certainly the notion that, you know, you kind of went from, there were like these gold standard data sets, right, like transaction data, and there was limited distribution. So like there was sort of, you know, low hanging alpha, let's call it, for like several years, really until probably, I mean, people would have different views on this, but like it was very, very easy to take a lot of this information once you'd done the mapping and tagging and just kind of roll it up and trade on it, you know, for at least some subset of coverage. And it was close to foolproof, at least in the, you know, 2015 to 2018 timeframe. So people have now, then it became a question of, you know, layering the other parts of the mosaic in. Right. So I think especially from 2019 and like especially through COVID with all the disruption, you saw this really 2019 to 2021, I would say, a lot more people came to the table and they were looking at a lot more than just credit card data. You know, foot traffic kind of had a nice moment, I would say, during that period, which makes sense. You know,
apps too, like you couldn't look
exactly
at versus Wayfair without understanding how many downloads and engagement and all that.
Exactly. And I think, again, there are we have customers today that are still really, I mean, on a relative basis, I would say they're still like very early in their data journey, right? Because there are people that come to us, maybe they want to use the software or it's the Excel plugin, but really, again, they want us to just kind of upskill and get them a really good foundation for like using data to either predict earnings or, you know, other more thematic analysis. And, but there are still folks that are really early. And then obviously there are folks that are potentially working with us as much so because they want to get a better sense of kind of like the wisdom of the crowd or sort of the consensus around these data sets. But they're doing a lot of stuff in like a full stack way, you know, on their own and in parallel to kind of what they're seeing from us. And it's like anywhere in between as well. I think in terms of people to your question, you know, how have things changed? I do think there's a sense of people have just started to get better at figuring out, I think, how to marry multiple data sets that might give you a different read. And one of the things we really have focused on that I think has been helpful, not just for our core client base is discretionary, but even for some of our more quantitative clients. And it actually resonates in terms of like the context stuff that we can get into as far as AI. With alternative data, there's so much nuance. No data category really should be typically treated in the same way and handled in the same, or, you know, productized, let's say, or modeled in the same way. And even within categories, there's incredible variance in terms of the biases, the nuances, whether it's how it's collected or who's in a panel, composition of a panel. So frankly, I think we've tried to help expedite, I guess you can call it quantamental approach in a sense, but really you're thinking in a very thoughtful way about each data set, the dimensions of the data, and trying to map that not just to a brand and a ticker, but there is one feature of the same data set that you should be using to model, let's say a subscriber type count in a certain region. And it might be normalized or lagged, or, there's different transforms you might want to do based on the nature of the data to track that KPI specifically. That same data set, you could be modeling a very different KPI based on different, a filter and pivot from the same underlying table. So I think that's one of the things that's changed is people are starting to get, I think, smarter about the application, sort of the design of the data and then the application of the data. And how it's not a one size fits all. It's not a roll it up and see which is trending, positively and negatively, and that's your signal from the data, so to speak. It's got to be, I think, a little bit more holistic and have a little bit of the fundamental lens in our view, at least.
And it's amazing that you guys help investors, through those nuances, and basically through some of the risks you can have by, let's say trusting the data too much, right? I've had my share of mistakes that I've seen personally, that I've made personally, where you see something that really looks like a signal, and it could just be a bad mapping or a bad data or something from the vendor, something completely different that's not related, or something that the whole industry might think is a signal, but it's not really an error. I've seen that too. Do you guys help your clients work through that? Does a system do that? Or does now, with this new technology, can AI help prevent these things? And I know Kessler always says, hey, look at multiple signals once so you can see if one of them is an outlier. That's a really interesting thing. But now, does technology make that scalable where people can actually trust the data more and the technology maybe will flag these issues?
It's a great question. And I think what's interesting is that we have already, I think, in a lot of ways, captured two different ways, I would say a more manual way of trying to flag or interpret those issues or, just outliers or whatever it may be in data in our UI and in other, deliverables. We have tables that would help someone kind of compare, as an example, whether it's forecast as they've changed point in time, or compare the underlying data to our modeled version of data. And sort of looking at what would the layman's interpretation of the quarterly forecast be, just looking at the data in a vacuum versus what we're modeling. So that's existed in the platform and in these files. Similarly, there is a lot that's sort of more systematically baked into our modeling algorithms. In other words, we have plenty of times where there's tagging issues, even with very reputable card data sets, or there's some, outage. And, sometimes you don't know until 2, 3, 4 weeks down the line that you've kind of had some decay in the underlying data. So we actually have algorithmically addressed that by our system will see that there's some kind of anomalous trend in the data. And it'll effectively, if you were using that as one of three, let's say, data set inputs to, an ensemble model, it's going to start proactively downweighting the data set where it sees an anomalous sort of thing happening, let's say, under the surface. So it almost, in a sense, your blended view is a lot more stable in a lot of ways.
More robust.
It's more robust. And I guess the interesting thing is though with AI, we've already been giving people this visibility. I think the problem in a lot of ways is there's so much stuff to look at that it doesn't actually become signal. And that's what I see really changing is we're already working on and have some of this, ready today in terms of interpreting what it see all that information and being actually to proactively flag to a customer, there's something going on here. And then you can actually look at the stuff that already exists, but we're going to tell you to look there. And I think, that's oversimplified in a lot of ways, but I think that's one of the big changes.
I know exactly what you mean. We're skipping ahead a little bit because I was going to ask you what in your view, what are the best applications of AI and this sense of data deluge or signal deluge that turns into noise is extremely difficult to deal with for a human mind. But now we have these great AI agents that can scale this intelligence over a wide range of signal. So if you don't mind, let's get to that later. I do want to get your take on one last thing before we dive in. So, you know, the alternative data has evolved a lot. Clearly, the types of data is you know, changing rapidly and new vendors are coming out. I wanted to ask you, like, your opinion. You know, we've had, you know, geolocation data, it's fantastic. We've had credit card data, you know, I was a big user of that. And then there's app data and clickstream data, foot traffic data. Is there, in your view, and I know you deal with 100 different data partners, you don't want to offend any one of them. They're all very, very important part of the mosaic. But in your view, is there anything that's like breaking out that's like new and interesting? And maybe it's the next thing where there's still green fields and a lot of alpha to be captured that managers should consider.
It's actually good because I can give you the 2025, you know, let's say mid 2025 and pre-answer. And then there's also another, I think, really interesting answer that's like more relevant and, you know, maybe topical, that answer, you know, that's related to your question. So look, there's always been kind of like the next thing, I would say, that we try to have a sense of in terms of what's like the unmet demand from a data category or like data coverage perspective. So we obviously think about that a lot, and we do a lot of work to try to make sure we're like the tip of the spear and like the first to, you know, have a lot of these conversations and start engaging with interesting new data sets and data providers. Like, one that stands out, I would say, that I do think there's going to be some interesting, frankly, I think there would be a little bit more noise in the market about it if not for everything else going on. The B2B spend side of things has kind of been like, you know, in a lot of ways, I would say the holy grail for the last, you know, 3 to 5 years. And the challenge, I think, there are some really interesting new sources that are, you know, are coming to market. And the challenge, I think, there still are things that need to be grappled with, which frankly, I think AI is going to help with tremendously in terms of like leveraging these data sets and making them, you know, really additive and more signal than noise. If you found even like a transaction data set, almost like a B2B transaction data set that was more card, like on the card side, it would be very interesting, but frankly, you're going to be capturing like a lot of, you know, travel, you know, you're going to be the expense side of things for like professionals, which it's interesting, but it's not like the holy grail of having consumer credit card data where you're seeing kind of the full scope of what these consumers and how they're engaging with folks. And you're seeing like this sliver to an extent. And you're not going to see, you know, the massive enterprise cloud contracts, right, in that type of a transaction data set for B2B. So we have seen more of these, I'd say, B2B, like other sources of, and, you know, I'll be somewhat coy, you know, for the time being. But there are multiple that are like sort of surfacing and coming to market. And they all have, I think, aspects that are really interesting. But I think, frankly, they're challenging to work with because there's just a significant difference between obviously the transaction payment side and then like looking at sort of a compilation of invoices and the nature of invoices and what type of provider the invoice relates to, the payment terms, the temporality kind of the data and the choppiness of the data, you know, with how a lot of these contracts work. So the point being, I think that's really exciting. I think it's a good time for these things to come to market because frankly, in the absence of AI, they could have been modeled, but it would have been a much smaller portion of folks that would have been able to get value from this type of data. And I'm hopeful that, you know, with a lot of the new things that are coming out, it makes it at least either taking one or multiple of these types of data sets and trying to layer them together and have a more robust signal with a little bit less, you know, bias or whatever it may be, you know, is becoming a lot more realistic.
It's very interesting. So part of the thing was what you're saying is it could be lowering the cost of entry for some people to start looking at some data sets that would be, you know, initially out of reach for these folks.
I think to an extent I mean, just as a category, it's an interesting category, and it's even maybe not for the largest, let's say 20 funds or so, right, that have, you know, obviously invested a lot in this stuff and you know, have significant like advantages in terms of capacity and capability. But I think for like the kind of everyone else, even large funds, but like folks that don't have necessarily like centralized or massive efforts around this stuff, I do think people that understand the application of data, you know, in terms of how you'd create a data model, what the biases and nuances, if you at least have some context and understand how to approach it and can sort of tell a system, a model, you know, an agent, that context and can download that to them, I think that it does make it, the data is more accessible for sure in terms of actually getting value from it. It's kind of the segue part of this, frankly, which is what's become more, I think, potentially compelling in some regards more recently, is the barrier to finding the one data point that might be the missing link in your model. That's become, at least it's possible that that's going to be something that's a lot more addressable in like a pretty efficient, you know, low, quick turnaround time. And this is not to say like, you know, the alt data, the premium alt data is commoditized or anything like that, because I do not have that view whatsoever. I think there are different ways to leverage it, combine it, model it, and just, you know, approach it that still create a lot of edge. But I do think AI is going to accelerate the sort of like composite signal effectively, you know, if that makes sense, that you'll get from like these top, you know, let's say 10, 15 data sets that folks are using. And those are going to be table stakes. They're still going to be necessary, at least, you know, in the foreseeable future. But it feels like the edge and the alpha can move just as much to like, what's the, you're telling an agent to go to like a dark corner of the web because you know the thing that's missing from your model in terms of how that business actually operates, and you know you're not capturing it in one of these data sets. Can you have, you know, the ability to go find it, ingest it, test it, and literally roll it into a model after it's validated, like within, you know, 24 hours. And there's some caveats there. Like a lot of times if you scrape data, you don't have history. So like take that with a grain of salt, but you kind of see, I see that as like kind of where a lot of the edge could come from, especially for smaller and medium-sized funds, which like kind of excites me. And, you know, we're trying to build a lot of tooling and capability around that type of workflow, obviously.
It's super, super interesting. It's a very exciting time to live, especially if you're like a data nerd like me and a data scientist and specialist like yourself. But I'll tell you, it's one of the questions that I wanted to ask you too is like, with the proliferation of AI and as people adopt it more, do you see normal fundamental funds kind of shrink the gap between themselves and what a quantitative fund with large resources would do? Does it, right? Because it can help with signal identification. It can help chase down that missing piece, right? That you can now ask an agent to do. You don't have to hire a whole team of data experts and analysts and developers and engineers to go do this and scrape this data and get it some other way. Does it close the gap? And then if it does, eventually will that all become commoditized? Like, that, is there eventually a place where that leads to where it's like, all right, everybody now has super smart AI agents that are trained on, like, that know how to identify the medium, the short, and the long term? What do you think? I know it's a loaded question. There's a lot of
It's what I've been up till, you know, 3 a.m. thinking about most nights in the last 2 months. So, you know, I think that you can look at like a more narrow use case. And there is democratization that will happen. Like if you're taking a narrow view and it's like a stock or a competitive set of companies, as an example, I do think it's going to be easier in the shorter term for like folks with, let's say, less resources or headcount or technology to get that up and running and try to do it on like in a more limited capacity. At the same time, this kind of gets to like, frankly, my experience the last, you know, 100 days or so, like really trying to upskill and dive into this stuff as much as possible. The experience I've had from, you know, sort of Q3 into Q4 of last year using some of these models and, you know, trying to kind of work that into different processes that we have, the output was like absolute garbage. And not just because the models have now, you know, they've obviously continued to release, become more performant and just a lot more powerful, but like, and that's a big part of it. But frankly, the biggest part is that I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't even understand, frankly, what context. I knew that the models didn't have the context to like answer my questions in a robust way, like that felt like anything other than just a Google search, right? It just wasn't good. And the more, first of all, I've sort of refined and started to like think, you know, more clearly about my approach to these things, you know, context, layers, memory, like the retention and sort of improvement of this stuff, there's kind of like this flywheel that in the last, the first 60 days, like I was still frankly on the fence around, you know, where is this stuff going? And the last 40 days, I'm like, yeah, I mean, just working on this stuff. If, I've never worked more in my life. I'm literally 18, 19 hours a day because there's so many things I want to build and that I can build. And they, like, they're actually high quality.
Can you pinpoint to the time where it actually flipped the switch for you? Was it just the output got better or you added some sort of context and the models just got that much smarter or better capturing more data? What was that switch that flipped?
I think, you know, as someone, and I appreciate you refer to me as a data scientist, which honestly is kind. Like I was a sales guy who was then a partnerships guy who has always been analytical because I, you know, I was formerly a trader, but like I've always kind of been maybe technical sales in this space. Even the, where the tooling has gone the last 3 years has allowed me to kind of like end to end do a lot more of this work, you know, like in powerful, you know, big data tools. But the reality is, I think, like, as far as this stuff, the aha moment, because Anthropic, like, wrapped up a concept that if I wouldn't have, it wouldn't have made sense or resonated if I was, like, looking at a Claude code terminal. But when the skills concept was kind of a little bit of that first aha moment of, like, I'm not just, like, searching something in Google and getting an output, because that's honestly what it felt like for the first month. And I was like, yeah, it's a little bit better and maybe it's kind of iterative, but like it's just a chat version of what my web search has been for the last few years. When I started like skills, I think for me and for us as a company, like three and a half months, whenever it was, like sort of late last year, was definitely the first aha moment. And it actually kind of, it's sort of when things started turning from like a threat to an opportunity, frankly, because we really are a context engine as a company. We have to think creatively about how to monetize it and what the models are going to look like and how quickly things might shift, you know, in terms of from a commercial standpoint. But at the same time, it kind of plays into a lot of what we've always been really, really good at. So we just needed to... Yeah. And frankly, the second thing, which, you know, I don't know how much I want this being out on the open web. The other aha moment's been in the last few weeks, spinning up a cloud bot.
Crazy. I've been playing with that thing too. Hopefully it's a burner laptop. Hopefully it's like a Mac Mini or something like that, a laptop. You don't want to use that on your work machine. But
yeah, it's on a VPS and a, you know, just a new laptop that I, but it's all pretty secure. Yeah.
Yeah. So the way you frame it, that, you know, Maiden Sentry and all your wealth of data that's actionable from the point of view of the buy side is just a context engine for these super ultra powerful LLMs really puts you in a place where you benefit from LLMs getting better because your context is now used in a better way to deliver better insight, to be more comprehensive. That is a great, great way to frame it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. And it's opened up our, honestly, we kind of hit on this a little bit earlier, like go to where people want to be with this stuff. I mean, frankly, it's hard. Not everyone's like, people are either going to build, I would imagine, like kind of their internal, you know, portal around this stuff, whatever they want it to look like. You know, I think probably for the near future, at least, it's going to be a lot of, frankly, just like building stuff out, context skills and certain processes through like a Claude, you know, sort of existing front end like that. But increasingly, I think folks are going to be, you know, building more proprietary stuff and like delivering all sorts of outputs. It could be, you know, we're actually in like the next couple of weeks, we're going to have the ability either in our portal and eventually through, you know, an LLM to basically just like decide what you want to be in like a, you know, a report, so to speak, right? Like show me kind of where things are tracking going to earnings for the next 2 weeks for my watch list and being able to just like build a custom kind of view. But the difference is if you tried to do something like that in the absence of context, also in the absence of the enriched version of data that's mapped, it's like it's never going to work, right?
It's not going to do
And it's off the shelf if you load it up and you've kind of put it through the enrichment pipeline and you've got the right context and you've played the game of whack-a-mole of like, because that's what the context stuff is. You really are continuing to add to it and compile it and then figuring out what's working, not working and iterating. So yeah, I think it's all really exciting.
Let's push it forward just a little bit. And can the Maiden Sentry platform create these AI agents that are proactive, that help managers. The manager sleeps at night, but let's say it does research on all the data that they're subscribed to through Maiden Sentry. And then they wake up and they're like, hey, here are all my reports on my watch list, my portfolio. And by the way, there's two other companies that are very similar to the sectors that I like, to these themes that I like. They also should be on my radar. Are we getting there? Is that kind of like where you're going? Is that what it's building? Or is it still too early? Is the technology not there yet?
I mean, it all depends, obviously, on like the time scale we're talking about. I would say the speed with which we can basically wholesale spin up and, you know, iterate on and create like different deliverables or sort of workflow, you know, tools or solutions. I mean, there's no, the marginal cost of iteration and customization has like collapsed in a lot of ways. And I think I'm not speaking to like, this is not a thesis on, you know, is ServiceNow or Salesforce going to be relevant in 2 years? Cause like, I don't, you know, there's a lot of nuance and complexity in by industry and software type and all those things that like, I'm not glossing over, oversimplifying, but you know, we're a startup and I think a lot of our clients, they vary, but they tend to be, you know, reasonably entrepreneurial, I would say, and trying to kind of move to the, you know, the bleeding edge on certain things. And, you know, so we have a little bit more leeway to try to, you know, really engage and dive in on this stuff, I'd say, sooner than later. I don't know. We're already using agentic workflows for like internal processes. Because the first thing at the end of the day you want to do is like eat your own cooking. So basically that we've tasked the team with like anything that you do manually, whether it's in research, in data science, in engineering, in sales, in customer success, support, anything you do manually, just like start there and automate that process entirely, right? You start to see efficiency gains right away, and it frees people up, frankly, to be thinking about like higher level, more strategic, like potentially material things and initiatives, which is like phenomenal. And that's really how we look at it, is like this multiplier where, depending on how you're approaching this stuff and how do you, like how much you're investing in it effectively, like we see growth. We actually think like our headcount should go up, and because we're going to be able to do so many more things for frankly different audiences too. So we look at it as like this accelerator that's exciting. And you know, realistically, there are going to be folks that don't adopt quickly, and you know, that maybe that's where we'll get some of the headcount from, right? Yeah. Like it's
For sure.
So
I have a lot of clients in the fintech space, and not a single client of mine is letting go of people because of AI. They're actually adding people. This is an opportunity to add business lines, to expand what they're doing, to expand the depth of their service that they're providing to their clients, to just cover their clients' needs more comprehensively. So this is, I think, the right way to think about it. Now, I'm going to ask you one last controversial question, and then we're going to wrap it up. But if you push that even further, right? And now you've got Made Century, and you have, you know, agentic AI. Some of it is operating basically autonomously. Do we need the hedge fund managers? Can just Stan himself or others or Jack or anybody plug into like a Maiden Sentry and have AI manage money for us? Do we really need this high level thinking that maybe the computer is not as good at as, you know, a hedge fund manager, but do we even need it? Can the AI totally handle the medium and the short term?
It reminds me that I didn't fully answer the part of one of the last questions you had, but I'm glad you asked this question because it's definitely related. There is still going to be, like, this is at least my view right now, which could change. And keep in mind, I'm like far from the most, you know, technical pundit you'd have on as far as AI goes. I'm just a guy who spun up a cloud bot a few weeks ago. but like people that are basically building out the orchestration of this stuff and are really like operationalizing like these agentic workflows and connecting them. And there's like an architecture and a system of, you know, it takes a long time to build up context across like probably the 50 to 100 even different like workflow / persona roles you might need. Now, could you do this in a nimble way where they'll be spun up? You're going to see on Twitter in the next 12 months, like, oh my God, this, you know, a quant bot is up, you know, gazillion percent. Like, yeah, it's obviously going to happen. And I sort of said before, if your scope is more narrow, lower AUM, you know, like I do think there's a way it democratizes that, but it's not going to like make you competitive with, you know, one of the multi-strats and like overnight. And the reality is because their orchestration and like how comprehensive that context layer is and the system, the interconnectivity of all these processes, that's going to be way more robust. And a lot of folks have been working on it for longer than others, and there will be this advantage. So I hope that helps answer. Like, I do think there's some democratization in certain areas or pockets or like use cases, but there's still going to be like an arms race where, you know, the folks that are investing heavily in building out and really thoughtful about the build and the design of this stuff, like, they're going to have a massive advantage.
That totally makes sense. The question was partly tongue in cheek, obviously. There's also a lot of, you know, there's a consideration for the LPs as well. The investor side, where the capital is coming from, are not exactly, you know, totally bought in to put their earned capital in autopilot here with Claudebot. But I will have my Claudebot hit up your Claudebot on Moldbook. That's going to be a conversation for another podcast.
But they're going to go start collecting some data. Maybe they'll come up with a data business, and we'll let off to the races.
Exactly. Oh, for sure. They're going to come up with something. Hey, thank you so much for being a guest, for speaking to our viewers. Where can people find you? Like, where do they go and reach out to Jack or anybody at Maiden Century? You know, the, like, website, email, where should they find you?
Yeah, it's a good question. Frankly, LinkedIn, come at me. I know, you know, it's archaic. Yes. It's also jack@maidencentury.com if anyone wants to, you know, catch up. And even just, frankly, I'm doing more just speaking with folks who are sort of going through some of the stuff I'm going through to wrap my head around it. I mean, look, this is a time where if you think anybody really knows what's going on or where things are going, or, you know, they have really strong view, like, I can promise you, at least in my experience, it's the opposite. So I feel like community and, you know, collaboration and engagement on this stuff really early is really important and additive. And so, always happy to chat. And thanks for having me, Stan. It's always good to connect.
Thank you so much. Love it. Take care. Bye, everybody. Thanks for tuning into Momentum. If you found today's episode valuable, don't forget to follow the show and share it with your network. This helps us a lot. To explore how AI can help your firm, visit acadia.im. I'm Stan Altshuler, and I'll see you next week with more practical insights to help turn data into growth and decisions into results with the help of AI.